We have Blues, Deep Dish Pizza, the Great Chicago Fire, Second City, all of those things we think of Chicago. But whether we like it or not, Al Capone is part of Chicago's very rich history, and he still is probably the most infamous gangster in American history. Al Capone, or Scarface, he dominated the crime scene during the 1920s. He was from Brooklyn. He came to Chicago when he was in his 20s, and we are going to be talking to an author, Bob General, who just is publishing a book that is really a fictionalized version of Al Capone and his rise in history. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Karen. Glad to be here.
Now, we've known each other for a long time, and you're a very talented musician. You were a teacher for many years, a family man. What prompted you to write this book? And by the way, what I have read so far is really good.
Thank you. It's probably the Chicago connection. Growing up in Chicago, you hear a lot about Al Capone. I think most people are familiar with some of the films that feature him in it, and just the character in general, the legend, if you will. But growing up here, you get the unique perspective of hearing a lot of stories from old timers that either knew him or were associated somehow, good or bad. And it kind of adds a little flavor to the whole thing. And during the COVID lockdown, basically, a lot of us were thinking about what we want to do with the rest of our lives, and a lot of people went creative and went to writing. Personally, I went to screenwriting and came up with the Capone idea. I wanted to tell the story that nobody really hears, the unglamorous, younger side of Al. When I think of Al Capone, I think of what it would be like to be in his shoes. This incredible opportunity of a lifetime of prohibition, that type of stuff. What would I have done if I was in his shoes? Would I have made the same choices? Would you make the same choices? So I put myself in his shoes and really fell in love with his youthful side before he was famous, before he became Al Capone. Just a young guy finding love for the first time, losing love for the first time, and those fractures that might have grown along the way.
The book is called They Call Me Al. It's by Bob General, and people can get it on Amazon maybe starting tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it should be available anytime now.
Okay. And so, you know, you take liberty, obviously, with conversations, because how do you know what the conversations were? But you've researched this, and it's based upon the facts. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about Al Capone's family. Did he come from a crime family, or was he just kind of fell into this life of crime?
Well, he was pretty much a little bit more of a middle class immigrant family. His parents came to Brooklyn from Italy. They struggled to make ends meet early on. But dad was a barber, and he had a little bit of a savvy to, he had a decent business compared to a lot of people that were struggling in immigrant Brooklyn, right? So he had a little bit of a perspective of he's a little better off than scrapping for pennies and stuff like that, and getting into fights and that type of stuff. I think he was a little bit more of a world thinker. One thing about Al that I do love is he loves the American dream, the American story. A lot of immigrants came here seeking a better life. He definitely took it to the nth degree.
But cut a few corners.
Cut a few corners, whatever he had to do. Hey, he was a businessman, yeah. Right? So pretty successful one at that.
And, you know, it's funny. I see some parallels between us, because during COVID, I sat down and wrote a book, mm-hmm. and I wrote about a very infamous client that I represented, John Wayne Gacy. And not to say, and listen, we're going to get the nasty grams, but, you know, these are bad people, right? They were responsible for murders. They were responsible for hurting people, and we're not condoning any of that. But there's a human side to everybody. And what is interesting is that Al Capone, whatever movie I've seen, whatever I've read about him, doesn't make him human. How did he become what he became? Did he fall in love with his wife? He stayed married to her. What was his family dynamic? You know, what caused him to cross the line here and to become successful at being bad? You know, and I think that is an interesting twist that has not been told. Let's talk, before we take a break, we just have a minute. Yeah, one of my favorite scenes at the very beginning where he meets who becomes his wife. And tell us about Al Capone's wife.
May Coughlin, Irish Catholic. So they were both Roman Catholic. Pretty devout. As far as I can tell, she went to church every day. I don't know if that was because she was married to Al Capone or if that came beforehand. But very devout, very upstanding young lady. I feel that his love for her and vice versa, her love for him, was more out of innocence. They met each other before any fame or glory or gangster sagas. And she wound up staying with him, you know, for the rest of his life. And that in itself speaks to my heart and tells me a little bit more about there's more to this guy than the legend that newspapers made out of him.
Just Call Me Al by Bob General. It's available tomorrow on Amazon. It's really a fun read. And tell me, you did some research, of course, to know about his family. And you know, he's got one brother who I call the white sheep in the family. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that brother.
Well, in the book, he's basically a ghost character because he disappeared at the age of 16. He was the number one son, so he was the patriarch in line. Al was actually number four son, so it really shouldn't have fallen to him. But Jimmy, or Vincenzo, disappeared at the age of 16. The family wasn't really sure of what happened to him. And in that case, in those days in Brooklyn, you would pretty much assume somebody would be dead. You know, they ended up in the river, ended up missing, ended up gone. In reality, we find that he does come back for Dad's funeral in 1920. So he's a ghost in this book, but it's interesting because he ran away from home and eventually wound up becoming a prohibition agent in Omaha or Nebraska.
So he was on the opposite side of the, as opposite as you can get.
Kind of.
Yeah.
So I think basically the Capone stigma, if you will, of gang life and being bad guys and criminals is more of a matter of choice. I don't think they were raised that way. I think it just basically where opportunities lie.
So, you know, he was good at being bad. There's no question about it. He was extremely successful making millions of dollars. What do you think you would attribute his success to? Was it that he was charming? Was he hardworking? Was he loyal? What were the qualities that you saw in him now that you've living in his shoes, really walking in his shoes, nice Italian loafers? You know, what made him so good?
Yeah, I do believe that he was a businessman at the core, and if he was somebody who lived today, he would be in that Mark Zuckerberg or Bill Gates type area where he saw the big picture and the opportunities to take advantage on a business level. The whole Prohibition era created a lot of businesses, you know, on the sly, if you will, that were illegal. But they were opportunities for individuals to take advantage. And Al was just probably better as a businessman. Very charming, very charismatic. Most of my research that involved personal interviews with people that knew him said nothing bad about him. They always talk about how generous he was, how cordial he was, how friendly they made him feel, even if they were just meeting him once. So I think there was definitely a very likable character there. And to the degree that, you know, when they heard bad things about him, maybe they didn't want to even believe it.
Right. Well, and like I said, you know, when you're doing bad things, that doesn't mean you're bad all the time.
Right.
You know, and there's a human side. He was a father and he was a husband. It wasn't a faithful husband, but he was a husband who had a wife who was devoted to him. And even after, and I read this about her, even after he died for many years, she tried to protect his legacy.
Oh, yeah. She went to court to fight Desilu Productions, which was doing the Untouchables TV series at that point. So, and I think she won to some degree where they had to make the focal gangster character more Frank Nitti rather than Al Capone. But a lot of that Untouchables story was basically dramatized anyway.
Yeah. So, and again, I'm of Italian heritage, and I do see a lot of friends who are involved in civic activities with the Italians, and they tend to, to be critical of this glamorization, let's say, of the mafia and, you know, all the movies that have been made, and we know all of them, The Godfathers and all of those movies. Were you concerned at all in glamorizing this lifestyle and who he was?
I don't think by this portrayal in this book especially, but in the overall series that will come, I don't have any intention of glamorizing it. I want to create an experience for the reader where it's a lived-in experience. So when he makes these choices on a daily basis, it's not like I'm doing this because I'm a bad guy and I'm, you know, forget everybody else. He was a very thoughtful person as far as even the people that wound up ending up on his wrong side, if you will. He went through as many hoops as he possibly could to not go after or eliminate somebody. He'd call him into the office. Hey, we need to straighten this out. There's a story about what they called the American Boys, which were four guys who nowadays seem to be involved with the St. Valentine's Day massacre. And when he met these guys, he brought them in because they were in the snatch racket. So they were basically kidnapping people for money. And he's like, you don't want to get in that racket. There's other ways you can do this thing, you know. So he would convince guys to do different things. And those that wound up working for him or part of his organization were fiercely loyal, treated like family. And, you know, you don't hear a lot of guys who left the Capone outfit to go join somebody else. They pretty much stayed in for life.
Do you have any knowledge, having done your research, that he actually killed people himself?
I'm fairly certain. You know, what kind of evidence we have 100 years later, you know, there's right. No concrete evidence. But most of my research points to about three instances where he probably did kill somebody. We think he might have been involved with the Billy McSwiggin murder, who was an assistant DA. There was a guy named Joe Howard, which he walked up into a bar, and the room full of people said he walked up and blew him away right there. But then they all forgot about it a week later when they had to answer questions in court. Oh. So those types of things happen. We don't have evidence, but I do believe there were two or three instances. Other than that, you know, his mentor, Johnny Torrio, was very much a guy who wanted Al to keep his hands clean, so keep a certain amount of separation from any of those actions.
When he wasn't, let's talk about Alcatraz, which I think everyone is fascinated by. And if you've taken that tour, it's really an interesting place to go. It's a horrible place. It's cold in the winter. It's hot. It's terrible. How did he fare there? And here's a man who was used to the finer things in life. I've seen pictures of some of his homes, and there's the one in Miami was just stunning. Mm-hmm. He had nice clothing. He had nice everything, cars, and he had all the luxuries. How did he do when he was in those horrible cells?
Well, right before Alcatraz, I think there was a certain concession during the trial process where he didn't hire the best attorneys. I almost feel like that was in purpose. I think he wanted to slow down his life. I think he was looking at prison as an opportunity to spend a few years, which originally I believe there's a plea deal for about 2, maybe 3 years, and he'd be back out. But his intention was to get out of the racket and to live a regular life. He missed all that. So once he got into Alcatraz, for the most part, he kept his nose down, tried to keep attention from himself. Of course, other inmates, you know, knew who Al Capone was, and they would bait him. They would try to get other things, you know, try to cause problems with him. But he was a model inmate, if you will. He was just trying to do his time and get out of there. Unfortunately, that was also the period of time of his health declining, and his mind was going at the same time.
Was that because of syphilis?
Syphilis is what the accepted story by biographers seems to be. And it would make sense with him dying at the age of 47 from untreated syphilis. But I think there were other things involved. Those will be in later books.
Aha, aha. And, you know, I grew up in the Berwyn, Cicero area, and I had a friend whose name was Capone, and she was related to him in some way. I don't know exactly how. She didn't like talking about it for probably good reason. But to your knowledge, are there family members out there? And are they out and about, or do they kind of keep quiet?
Well, Al directly only had one son, and that son had a few daughters that didn't wind up keeping the Capone name. In fact, His son changed his name because of the stigma at the time. So as far as a direct descendant from Al with the last name Capone, I don't think we have any. We do have nieces, some nephews, whatnot, that have gone on and carried the name. But I think it was popular right after his heyday, if you would, to change your name and not be called Capone. A friend of mine actually was at a wedding just a week or so ago, and there was a Capone family member there. And I can't verify the lineage or whatnot, but I think it's starting to be a little bit cooler, if you will, to have that name. It's not, you're not associated with a monster.
That's right. So you see this going into being a docudrama, right? Some kind of film or some kind of play, right?
So originally it started out as a TV pilot. And at that time, we had developed and planned for about 5 seasons worth of Capone's story, mostly in a linear storytelling session. Frustration from not getting things greenlit in Hollywood and that type of stuff led me to decide to put this all into IP, into prose, into books. So what I have basically right now is a 5-book series chronicling the whole Capone saga. And this first novella, this little taste of Just Call Me Al that I wrote, was mostly an experiment to see if I could match his voice, if I could have people interested in walking in the shoes of a 14-year-old Al Capone before he is anybody. But as the series progresses, as the other books are finished, we'll basically be meeting him at 18 years old, at 22 years old, at 25 years old. And he had a pretty short career. He got to the top of the Chicago outfit in 1925, and he was in jail at the end of 1931. So we're talking about 6 years of being on top, if you will. So it was a short career, and I'm just very excited to tell this in the first person so that our readers could kind of feel like what it's like to walk in Al's shoes.
Well, you do, and you've really got great, great dialogue. Much of it is dialogue. I'm going to give the name of the book, and I'm going to say it right. Just Call Me Al by Bob General, available on Amazon. Thank you so much for joining us, Bob.
Thank you. And if you want 3 free chapters, go to my website, robertgeneral.com, and you can join my mailing list and get updates on anything Al Capone.